welcome to the latest episode of Your Wealth with Gemma Dell, a podcast series designed to help you create, grow, and protect your wealth.
Hi, and welcome to Your Wealth. I'm Gemma Dell, NAB Trades Director of SMSF and Investor Behaviour. I've mentioned in the past that despite being heavily overweight the ASX, NAB Trade investors and Australian investors more generally are becoming much more confident with investing offshore over time. If we look at the international stocks they're choosing to buy directly, 9 of the top 10 individual companies NAB Trade investors are buying are tech-based. The US giants you'd expect in Apple, Amazon and Alphabet, but also the Asian tech megacaps such as Tencent, Alibaba and Baidu. So in the world of tech, where do you want to be? In the US or in China or both or neither? Today I'm joined by John Tringali of WCM Investment Management, a US-based asset management, which has listed investment options in Australia, including their Quality Global Growth Fund. John, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
So John, can you tell us a bit about the technology universe as you see it from an investment perspective? What do you like? What do you not like? How do you see it?
It's a great question. I think at a very high level, we think that technology is one of the premier places to be as an investor over the next decade. We continue to see technology proliferating into more and more industry and more parts of our life. And so the way we think about it is over a very long-term perspective, where do we want to be positioned, companies that can grow their competitive advantage and compound capital for a long period of time. So there's really two buckets. I think there's the high growth, kind of exciting buckets, the very disruptive companies, the FANG companies would fall into that. Some of the big China internet companies, which we can dive into, is one very exciting opportunity set, and there's some increasing new challenges and opportunity to discuss there. The other way that we're fond of playing the proliferation of technology is through what we consider our more picks and shovels companies. These are companies behind the scenes. They're not household names, but they're dominant in what they do, and they're enabling the proliferation of this increase in technology, maybe without taking some of the same risks as the bigger known companies. So one example that we've been invested in since 2004 is a company called Taiwan Semiconductor.
Mm-hmm.
They make about 60% of semiconductor chips in the world. And so rather than pick a semiconductor chip designer, you know, like an NVIDIA or a Qualcomm, et cetera, where maybe they'll have a great new chip and it'll get in the iPhone and they'll do really well for a year, they may not be able to repeat that. So a safer, more consistent way to play that theme would be to own Taiwan Semiconductor, where you're going to get maybe 9, 10, 11% revenue growth for many, many years as they really are the market for chips. So you're going to have a less cyclical, more predictable way to play that proliferation of tech.
That's really cool. And thinking about it in those two buckets is quite interesting because I certainly, if I talk for our investor base, they get very excited about the big brand names and anything that you can slip in your pocket or watch on the television, probably not the television anymore, on one of your devices and so on, that tends to come to front of mind for a lot of our investors when they're thinking about investing in technology, and they will be where our investors start with the big brand names. But we can see from their trading behavior and from their investing behavior that they are moving into more of those core stocks, as your picks and shovels, we'll have to start using that term, into the picks and shovels area. So which companies do you prefer on both sides? Do you have both sides of those in your portfolio?
We do. We have some of the picks and shovels, and then we also have some of the bigger names. We've two names, I think, of note that we've sold in the fairly recently. Just this month, we sold out of Amazon.
Wow.
We had been investors since 2011, and we're seeing some changes going on that are a little concerning. And I think selling on after a great run is something we decided to do.
Mm-hmm.
Facebook, we sold almost a year ago. Back in May of 2018, we saw some challenges culturally there, and I think with the core Facebook engagement, some concerns at the leadership as well, that we moved on from that. We've owned Alphabet in the past.
Mm-hmm.
We don't own it now, but we do own Netflix, and that's one that we're quite excited about. We think is very disruptive in media. You think about the television market, it's about $400 billion US, and it's being disruptive rather massively. When you think about cable bundles in the US, for instance, people are paying over $100 a month and they have all these different channels. And the prospect of adding Netflix for, say, $12 a month and having all this content on demand is a very powerful recipe. And they're in a position we've never seen in media before, where the amount of revenue they're generating is creating this flywheel effect where they have 110 million subscribers. with all that revenue, they're investing aggressively into new content. And we can tell you, talking to producers and creative types in places like Latin America, throughout Europe, Netflix has replaced HBO or Showtime as kind of the marquee. If I'm a really talented director, I want Netflix behind me because they've got the resources, the tools, they leave me alone, give me a lot of creative license. And so what we think that's going to create is this effect where they outspend on content, more people switch over to Netflix, they're able to keep reinvesting and really grow this advantage for a long period of time. And there's so much scale and operating leverage in their model once they get those critical masses that it's going to be really hard for anyone to catch up with them.
I think that's a really interesting perspective. There's a couple of things that I've been hearing about that. One was that obviously one of the Netflix programs was picked up for the Oscars, which is unheard of 2 years ago. I mean, that's absolutely fascinating. People were outraged that they didn't win. But in addition to that, the audience that they are trying to get access to is the audience that cinema can no longer get access to. And they were saying they're looking for women. And they were saying, if you want to put good quality programming in front of women, that's movies and television, I guess, you do it via Netflix, because they can't go for 2 hours in the middle of the day. If you've got small children, I've got small kids, so I know this personally. But you can watch it at 10 o'clock at night when everybody else has gone to sleep. So this on-demand, there are very specific audiences you can access that weren't previously really watching anything because they didn't have the time.
Absolutely, and they have a similar offering for kids. You know, children's programming is an area, has been an area of focus for Netflix as well, and it's a nice alternative to just turning whatever cartoons happen to be on in the morning and commercials, and there's opportunity for parents to control and edit content better, and so on. So I think there's a lot of niches. You're right, the addressable market is just massive for Netflix.
Something a little bit different to what we've seen previously. It's really cool. Yeah. So if you had to, so we've talked about the U.S., tech companies, the giants. Tell me a little bit about China.
So China, I think if we had to pick one, I think in a lot of ways, China is structurally more attractive, or has been, in technology, even than the U.S., because you have this leapfrog dynamic. Mm. You know, in the U.S., for example, in payments, you've gone from cash to now credit cards. And credit cards are pretty good, right? The entrenched consumer behavior is to use their credit card. There's not that incremental benefit to now going to mobile. You go somewhere like China, where you've had maybe a lot of cash transactions, and you're leapfrogging credit cards essentially and going straight to mobile with WeChat Pay or Alipay or so on. And so I think these dynamics are creating opportunities for the Eastern tech companies to have larger footprints than in the US. So you think about how big a Visa or a MasterCard is in their market cap. You know, Tencent, I'm sure everyone's very familiar with WeChat, but you think about, so they've got maybe some of that market share that a Facebook would have, that an Uber would have with Didi and so on. But they also have this massive opportunity in payments where, as you know, Apple or Google can't really move into payments and move the needle because Visa and the card networks are so entrenched. There's already those barriers to entry in place where there aren't a lot of the same established incumbents in China. And so I think there's more white space for the Chinese companies, which is quite exciting.
So are there any particular Chinese companies that you like? You've mentioned Tencent. It's been quite the rocky road over the last 12 months at least, and previously it's been very interesting to observe. Yeah. Some of our investors moved back in through last year as the price came off, and then have actually been selling through the beginning of this year, which is quite interesting. The price has been a bit stronger. Yeah. Anything that you like particularly?
You know, China, Tencent is our favorite name, and it is our biggest position in China today. We've been investors since 2012, so we tend to take a longer time horizon, but we do move around the position. We actually also added back in November at some of the peak of the pessimism around new game approvals. We use that as an opportunity to grow the position, but we really like where they sit competitively. We think their cloud business, you know, you look at how massive Amazon Web Services is in the U.S., it's an absolute beast. Tencent has their cloud business, which is growing, you know, 70 to 80% every quarter of last year. It's coming off a lower base, but there's massive potential. I was in China not recently, and you talk to some of the businesses who are building their business on the cloud, and it's clear there's a lot of runway there. So I think Tencent with payments, which they're not monetizing yet, and the cloud business continues to be our favorite idea there.
That's very cool. So a couple of the other very popular stocks that we see, Alibaba and Baidu are the other two in the top 10 from the Chinese side. Thoughts?
You know, we owned Baidu for a period of time. I think good business, that they have a big bet on on a lot of this AI, artificial intelligence, and I think it's too early to know who's going to be the winners. We don't feel like their competitive advantage is as dominant as Tencent. They don't have as many clear growth drivers or levers to really pull as Tencent, so we do prefer that. Alibaba is a great business. We actually do own it in our dedicated emerging markets portfolio. They're, of course, trying to make a shift to go vertically integrate more, do more on the logistics than the shipping, and they're making some pretty big moves and big investments. And if that plays out the way that they intend and are strategizing over a few years, I think there could be a lot of opportunity there as well. So we certainly like Baba.
Right. I think all of our investors will be thrilled with all of the names that you've mentioned. Very happy with all of those. Any risks you see on both sides? Because there's obviously regulatory risk. There's some very interesting trade talks that are being managed by Twitter. it's quite interesting to observe from a distance how things could play out. And you talked about some of the risks, for example, to Facebook. What are your thoughts on those?
Yeah, I think the the big risk we see in the U.S. is these big tech companies, the FANGs. They used to stay in their own lanes and have their dedicated, you know, Facebook, I dominate the social network and digital ads along with Google. And now we're seeing Amazon creeping into digital ads with their e-commerce platform. We're seeing, you know, Apple Payments and Google Payments maybe trying to get involved with Visa a little bit. So it seems like new growth is harder in the U.S. And so you have the big tech giants are encroaching on each other's turf, which I think will be interesting to see how all that plays out. So that's one risk we think about in the U.S. market. In China, I think the big risk for us is always regulation and around the government. Absent their intervention, I think the businesses we've talked about have very clear runways to keep growing their profitability and keep their growth rates very nice and sustainable. But the one wild card is that government intervention. So that's something that I think investors need to watch very closely.
Are you concerned about the trade wars at all, or is that less of an issue?
You know, I think it's less of an issue for the tech companies because, you know, Facebook, for example, Google are banned in China, so they don't have any revenue exposure there, and in the same way that Tencent and Alibaba don't really have any meaningful business in the States. So I actually think those domestically focused companies are a little bit more insulated from the trade wars. Of course, there could be some tangential effects if we had some really large macro slowdown, but I think those companies are insulated a lot more than some of the manufacturing businesses out there that are shipping cross-border.
John, thank you so much. I know all of our investors will be super fascinated with everything you're talking about. These are absolutely the stocks that they look to, not just when they are buying directly, you know, it's a smaller proportion of our investors who buy directly, but also when they look at a portfolio of international stocks or a professional fund manager, this is exactly what they're after. You and your team produce some fantastic insights, and you also have investment options available in Australia. You're obviously not based here. Where can people go to find out more?
Yeah, so Contango Asset Management distribute and promote our quality global growth strategy via a listed investment company, an exchange-traded mutual fund, as well as an unlisted managed fund. And for more information, people can go to contango.com.au/WCM.
John Tringali, thanks so much for joining me.
My pleasure. Thank you.
As always, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the podcast. We hope it's been helpful in your journey to creating wealth. We always love to hear from you, so if you have any feedback or suggestions for future topics, please just email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au. I'm Gemma Dale. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to Your Wealth with Gemma Dale. To stay up to date, please subscribe to this podcast series or email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au.
Please note that any advice provided in this podcast has been prepared without taking into account your objectives, financial circumstances, or needs. Before acting, you should consider the appropriateness of the information. To find out more, please visit nab.com.au.